Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Editor Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:32 p.m. and that is Central Time. And today is June 15th. So I thought there are a couple of things that are worth considering today. The first are the global levers for global liquidity. So let's have a look at those first. Then let's also think about the evolving mania in AI. So first things off, the CSI 300 was up almost 2%, and that was driven by the fact that China is beginning to cut rates. Now, the piecemeal fashion in which they've been making liquidity available hasn't been enough to allay fears about the downward spiral in economic activity and the pressure that's been put on the property sector. So, at there are increasing signs that they will be willing to provide more assistance to the market. So that's a positive, and it's certainly a positive in terms of global liquidity, and it also sparked flows into China. So not only was the CSI 300 in positive territory, but so was the Hang Seng, and it was up 2%. And that is now, I think, fairly clear confirmation of a higher reaction low. It is now testing the region of the psychological 20,000 level and the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is the first area of potential resistance, and there's a good chance that it's going to take it out. Because if we do see a greater assistance provided to the Chinese economy, then the Hang Seng will be one of the vehicles that people use to take advantage of that. And then we have the renminbi, and it bounced today from around the 720 area, which is where support came through in previous downward spirals. So now the next question is, are we going to see upside follow through tomorrow? I think there's a good chance of that. So that's, I think, where we're definitely seeing at least one of the big levers of global liquidity moving in favor of easing. Now let's think about what's happening with the yen and Japan. So the yen today had been weaker, but then reversed it. And I think that is more of an indication of what really went on with the dollar. And we've had quite a bit of movement with the euro as well in here today. Now, let's just pay attention to the fact that the yield curve control is still in play, still favoring the 10-year and attempting to hold the yield below 50 basis points. And so far succeeding, there's no real pressure on the 50 basis point level at the present moment. But then the Nikkei has been the vehicle that investors have been using to play this trend. It was in mildly negative territory in here today. It is quite overbought in the short term. And I think there's a strong chance it's going to go up and test the 35,000 level before we see meaningful evidence of resistance coming through, because that has been the primary consistency characteristic of this very lengthy, rangy, and then breakout trend that we've seen. It's a big staircase step sequence uptrend. It's just that the steps have lasted on average for 2.5 years before the incremental breaks higher. So Japan is still on the global liquidity plus side, adding liquidity. Then you have the other side of the equation. So the euro today was in positive territory, up over a cent, bouncing very emphatically. So you have Christine Lagarde basically saying they'll be raising rates again in July. And it's not simply just that they're raising interest rates. So the ECB is now being more aggressive than the Federal Reserve. And they are calling back in the TLTR loans that have been outstanding. And that represents about 500 billion. So That was, you can see that there was a huge spike higher in demand for those kinds of loans in 2020. And now that those loans have been outstanding for a while, they are starting to be called in. And that is probably going to affect smaller banks more than larger banks. So it's not showing up as stress in the Euro Stoxx Banks Index, which is actually firming from the region of the 200-day moving average. The big upswing of the issues that banks have encountered, both with the pandemic and then subsequently with the jump in interest rates, and then being left holding the bag really with all that negative yielding debt, is that the smaller banks are those that are going to experience the most stress, and that it'll represent a concentration factor, with more control being concentrated in the hands of the larger lenders. So then let's also think about what's happening with the US dollar. So the dollar index was in positive territory initially today, and then with the ECB raising rates and being rather hawkish, then the dollar just reversed that. So it was a bit, there were tenterhooks in the gold market today because it was breaking down out of this short-term range, and then it reversed it and is closing up about $15 today, so pushing straight back up into this short-term range. Now, we've had really quite unimpressive performance by gold miners over the course of the last few months. But the reason that people own gold miners is because they offer leverage to the gold price. And one would hope that they will offer leverage on the upside as well as the downside. But since gold has been correcting for the last month, well, then gold miners have also been pulling back. Now they're in the region of the 200-day and 1,000-day moving average. And now also, it's about where you'd anticipate the succession of higher reaction lows to be reasserted. So I think the 30 level is a big, important level, and it was certainly an important level in 2019 and 2020, because it's the upper side of this base formation that has been forming since 2013 through to 2020. So this did look like a first step above the base. And then it failed and it came right back down into the range and has subsequently rebounded. So if gold miners are going to find support, this is pretty much where one would anticipate that should begin to happen. So if we think about the global levers of liquidity, Japan and China are on the plus side. Europe is still tightening. So that's on the negative side. And then the USA, they may have paused the pace of interest rate hikes. And what I think is interesting is the different points that people are taking from what Jay Powell had to say yesterday, because I listened to that press conference, and the thing that stuck out to me is that he was basically saying that they're willing to do whatever it takes to get inflation down, and in order to do that, there's going to have to be below par growth and higher unemployment. What many people in the market heard instead was that they're going to have to wait and see, and that they are pausing right now, and they may yet raise interest rates, but that's probably not going to be pretty close to the end of the hiking cycle. So then when we think about the S&P 500, well, even if we are at the upper end of the interest rate hiking cycle, the logical conclusion is that if they need to get inflation under control and the less interest rate sensitive portions of the market aren't going to be influenced by interest rates, so what are they going to be influenced by? Well, more than likely it's going to be because of lower economic growth and higher unemployment. That's technically a recession. But the S&P 500 was up 1% in here today and now starting to pick up pace. So it's being led higher by companies like Microsoft. Now, Microsoft has embraced artificial intelligence with both hands. They've basically taken the Silicon Valley mantra, which is to move fast and break things. And they're really running with it, and they're implementing AI into everything they've got. But the challenge with using ChatGPT is that it gives an answer to a question that looks convincing, but then needs quite a bit of work subsequently to actually make it usable. So I thought that, for example, I would use ChatGPT to create a little bit of code so that I could think about how to make, for example, or at least how to find a key reversal in a series of data. I'm going to pull this chart over. So I'm going to put this in. So what I said was the definition of a key day reversal is the price moves to a new 3-month low, and I just took that as an arbitrary number for the series, then rallies during the day to close at a level above the high of the previous day. Can you find those characteristics in a data set? And he says, yes, of course. I said, well, there's too much data, so how do I put this into Excel? So now let's say my data set is too large, so then it just gave me the lines of code to put in. And that seems to be fine, but unfortunately the problem is it doesn't work, and the reason it doesn't work is because the look back isn't accurate, and that even though I put it into a series where I know that there are several key day reversals that fit my definition exactly, then it returns no results. So it looks really convincing. And just by looking at the code that's being provided, but then it's going to require quite a bit of work and fiddling with it to, in fact, make it happen. So now, obviously, that is a major labor-saving device. It definitely helped me to get the basics for the code, and then I just have to go off and edit it and play with it. I don't have to learn how to code or how to write that string of information. This, I think, is a good example of where we are with artificial intelligence. It is capable of giving you broad spectrum answers to questions, but then down to the nitty-gritty isn't quite as useful. And I think this is also going to be very similar to the kind of way that we've seen autonomous vehicles go, that to get to 80% of the problem is easy, and the final 20% is really hard. And I think that's very similar to what we're going to see with artificial intelligence, that getting up to one level is easy. Getting up to just general artificial intelligence is a much more difficult thing to do. And now, if that's the case, well, then the one thing that we certainly know is that Microsoft has done exceptionally well from AI, even though their sales from it haven't really gone anywhere. And then Nvidia is doing exceptionally well from AI, even though there is the expectation that their order flow is going to quadruple, and that their margins are going to remain steady, and that they're simply going to enjoy the most best of all possible worlds. Now, there is absolutely no doubt that the price is accelerating. This is a 10-year chart, and in the course of the last 9 months, it has gone from 100 to 426. That's an even bigger advance than we saw during the pandemic. So these are really extraordinary facts. Now, obviously, when we think about this mania that's underway here, well, we have to start thinking about that in terms of play the trend versus the impact of rising interest rates in an environment where you have this speculative mania activity. Well, we're still in an environment where the yield curve spread is still inverting, and it was at a new low in here today. So this is normal that we get a lot of speculative activity as the yield curve is inverting. It's only when it starts to come out of that inversion in response to lower economic growth. That's usually when you get the worst of the selling pressure. Now, I think it's also important to then think about the smaller portion of the technology sector that has not been breaking out to new all-time highs. But the ARK Innovation ETF is now at the upper side of its base formation. It has pushed back up through the 200-day moving average. And then if we look at what have been the best performers within it, well, then they have Palantir, Meta. So Palantir and Meta have been among the best performers in the artificial intelligence suite. So they own those companies, and we're not talking about small caps here. When we do look at small caps, then the small cap index has bounced, and we should also think about what are the major constituents of that. Well, a lot of the regional banks are constituents of the Russell 2000, and the regional banking index has rebounded. It has unwound half of its oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average, and now it's looking a little tired and a little overbought in the short term, but still there's potential that it will fully unwind that oversold condition. Now, as we think then about where are we in terms of these bond markets? Well, the 10-year yield is a little bit softer, or contracting somewhat in here today. There is obviously the change that we're starting to see in retail sales. So I think you have lots of different ways of looking at it. So retail sales month over month were up. Then we can think about the ex autos and gas. They were higher than expected but lower than last time. So they fall, but not as much. And that was also something that helped to propel the stock market. But initial jobless claims continue to trend higher. And it was anticipated that they would be lower than they actually came in at. And then continuing claims are also higher. So we're starting to see unemployment rising. And I think it's very interesting that you still have lots of job openings, and then you also have companies that are cutting back at the same time. So what companies are basically saying is they can't find the right people. They don't like the people they've got, so they're firing those. And then they've got job openings, but they can't fill them because they can't find the people they want. And that seems to be a little bit of a contradiction in terms. So we're certainly in this sort of interesting environment. As long as the trends are in play, we give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. We also have to be aware of the background liquidity conditions globally, which are beginning to ease because of what's happening in China. That should be particularly beneficial for the industrial resources. Not necessarily for the regional banks in the USA, for example. But the LME Metals Index is bouncing here from the region of the lows put in at the end of last year. Chinese demand is far and away the most important factor for copper. And copper prices have continued to rebound from the lows put in May. As long as China is willing to stimulate their economy, then the bullish argument for copper is a lot more convincing. Then, when we think about the oil price, well, it has been up one day, down the next, but it was up $2.40 in here today. So that is certainly bouncing from the lower side of the range. We're still in an incredibly tight environment. And when the breakout eventually comes, it is likely to be dynamic in nature. And that would mean that a sustained move above 80 or below 70 is what will be required to confirm a breakout. My gut tells me that it will eventually break on the downside, but we'll see what happens. And today certainly puts some doubt under that conclusion. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.